You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
So yeah, big topic here, parenting in the age of social media. Social media has really exploded in the last 10, 15 years. So I'm seeing this a lot in my own life and in the kids I work with. So before I get started on all of that, just a quick introduction here. So just a little bit about me. This is my family. My husband, Nick, there. He's here being so supportive. He's the greatest. We've been married for 14 years. He's a great girl dad. And the reason why my PowerPoint looks as good as it does. So really grateful for him. We've got two girls, Vivian there in the purple. She's 6 in first grade. And then Maddie is 4. She's in preschool. And they go here, so they're just over in the other building right now. And we also have a little dog, Coco, her little poodle. So that's us this past summer at Acadia National Park, which highly recommend going there. So yeah, I'm a mom, 2 sweet little ones, but I'm also a licensed professional counselor. So I've been working with kids and families since 2014, taking breaks to have my babies, but, you know, always coming back because I love it so much. So I work with all ages, but I always make sure that at least half of my client load is always working with kids, adolescents, teens, and their families. I love it. It's super fun. Love working with kids. And I've seen social media come up a lot in the kids that I work with. So, yeah, I asked Sherry, has anyone taught on this? She's like, no, why don't you do it? And I'm like, oh, that's not what I meant, but okay, here we are. So, here's a little bit about what we're going to be talking about today. We'll talk about the effects of social media on our kids. Then we're going to be talking about our own social media use as parents, and then some practical tips, some ideas, things that we can do with all the information we're about to take in. But first, I have a couple caveats here that I wanted to go over. One, this is just not exhaustive information. There's so much on the topic of technology. I really wanted to focus in on social media specifically today. And I've spent the last few months doing a lot of research and just had to cut myself off at a certain point. So this isn't exhaustive. There's also a lot more that I couldn't include for the sake of time. So I'm just trying to hit what I felt like are the most important things here. Secondly, I want us to leave the parental guilt at the door, behind us. I don't want anyone this morning to walk away feeling anxious or bad or guilty about their own social media use or your kid's social media use. That's just not God's way, right? He doesn't want us to walk around feeling guilty. But instead, I am hoping that this offers all of us some self-awareness, some knowledge, so that we can, you know, have some tools and make some healthy changes in our lives and in our kids' lives so that we can handle this topic appropriately. So with that said, let's get right into it. This is the first thing as I started researching, the first thing I came across. So this is the Surgeon General, Vice Admiral Vivek Murthy. So he is the nation's doctor. His job is to provide Americans with the best scientific information, the best medical information, so that we can improve our health and decrease the risk of illness and injury and things like that. So he has put out this document. It's an advisory on social media and youth mental health. So I was really surprised. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm not the only one who's seeing that this is problematic. He's got this, you know, 25, 30-page document on all the things that parents need to know on this topic. So you can just Google this. It's really easy to find, and you can read it. It's, you know, 25-ish pages. So here's some of the things that he found. Up to 95% of youth ages 13 to 17 report using a social media platform, with more than a third saying they use social media almost constantly. Although age 13 is commonly the required minimum age used by social media platforms in the US, nearly 40% of children ages 8 to 12 use social media. I found this stat pretty shocking. I mean, I knew because of the work that I do with kids that social media was a thing, but 95% of all teenagers, then we've got some of these young ones, you know, probably changing their date of birth a little bit on social media as well. And then a third of them saying that they use it almost constantly. So this is something that's happening a lot. And, you know, there's so many different, I can't even keep track of all the different platforms there are. But some of the big ones that kids are using are TikTok, Snapchat's really big, YouTube, you know, you could go back and forth of whether or not that's social media, because there's a lot of influencers on there and gamers and things that kids follow. So yeah, all kinds of platforms. Most kids are on some kind of social media platform. And they go on to say, at this time, we do not yet have enough evidence to determine if social media is sufficiently safe for children and adolescents. So there are just not regulations put into place on social media. And you think about all the regulations that are put into place for kids in every other area of life. Car seat safety, child care, you know, everyone has to be background checked. Our schools are locked. No one can just come in and out. There's just regulations for everything for our kids. But there aren't any regulations on social media. There are people out there who are trying their best to try to create regulations, put them into place. And a lot of those people are actually former Facebook, Instagram employees who have left for ethical reasons. So they're trying really hard, but they're getting a lot of pushback from these platforms, unfortunately. So let's get into some of the effects. The first thing I want to focus on is brain development. So age 10 to 19 is such a sensitive period of brain development for kids. There's all kinds of things happening. So we've got risk-taking behaviors at their peak. Just remember back to your middle school years and the kinds of stupid things that you were experimenting with. Same things are happening today. This is the time where we're figuring out, who am I? What do I want to be like? Am I worth anything? What are my core beliefs? What do I believe about myself? What do I believe about my peers and adults and God? We're developing all these things during this age, 10 to 19 about. Then you add in all the social pressures, all the things happening with your peers, all the conflicts, comparing yourself. Am I as athletic as so-and-so? Am I as skinny as her? Am I as pretty as her? The list goes on. Then add into that some heightened emotions, hormones, swirling around, making kids be crazy. So there's just so many things happening in the brain at this time. And so then you add social media on top of that, and it can become problematic. So this is, again, from that advisory from the Surgeon General. It says social media exposure can overstimulate the reward center in the brain, and when the stimulation becomes excessive, it can trigger pathways comparable to addiction. Small studies have shown that people with frequent and problematic social media use can experience changes in brain structure, similar to changes seen in individuals with substance use or gambling addictions. And a national representative survey of girls ages 11 through 15, one-third or more say they feel addicted to a social media platform. Okay, so we've got this highly sensitive period of brain development, and then we add in social media. We're overstimulating this reward center. And what that can do is change the actual brain structure. It can change the neural pathways in your brain in a similar way that we see in addicts with substance use or gambling. And so you can imagine you've got lots of brain development happening, potential for addiction, and changing your brain structure equals not great. So just a little visual here on how the reward center in our brain works. So we've got dopamine, right? Dopamine is the chemical released in your brain that makes you feel really good. So we all engage in dopaminergic behaviors, which are just behaviors that release dopamine, that make us feel good. So eating, sex, drugs, TikTok, physical activity is another one. Being outside is dopaminergic. So we all have these things that we do. So this is how it works. I eat a Reese's. Man, that is a really good Reese's. My brain releases dopamine. I feel so good. That was really delicious. I feel great. I feel so good that I want to eat another Reese's. So I go in my kid's Halloween candy and I go grab another Reese's and I repeat it, and then it's the cycle. And so that is how the reward center in our brain works. And this isn't necessarily a bad thing. Dopamine's good, it's important. We all need it because it does make us feel good. But it becomes problematic when we increase the tolerance. So now I am not just eating one Reese's at night to feel good and happy before bed. I'm taking a handful. Now I need a whole bag. So you see, we up the ante a little bit and we increase our tolerance. And so that's when it becomes problematic, and especially with kids who are in the sensitive period of brain development. They increase their tolerance for stimulation, become overstimulated, and you get this kid. I'm so bored. Everyday activities are just not cutting it anymore. You know, going outside, free play, all that stuff is just not all that exciting because they're overstimulated in other ways on screens. And it can really prevent them from developing the skill of patience. They're so used to getting things right now, scrolling, you know, those quick like YouTube videos or reels on TikTok where it's just like 10 seconds scroll, 10 seconds scroll. And it's like dopamine, dopamine, dopamine. And so then, you know, just playing outside isn't cutting it anymore. So that's where I wanted to start, because that has a lot to do with the mental health effects that we see. So let's start with depression and anxiety. So a longitudinal cohort study of U.S. adolescents ages 12 to 15. So they have this group of kids and they follow them over a period of years. And here's what they find. Adolescents who spend more than 3 hours a day on social media face double the risk of experiencing poor mental health outcomes, including symptoms of depression and anxiety. So you're like, wow, 3 hours a day, that's a lot. But then you look at your own screen time report and you're like, that's actually not a lot, at least for me. But also remember that in one of the first slides that I showed, 1/3 of teens are saying that they're on social media almost constantly. So 3 hours a day is not that much. And so kids who are doing that are at double the risk of experiencing depression and anxiety. Along with that comes sleep disturbances. So in this advisory, they reviewed 42 studies, and what they found was a consistent relationship between excessive social media use and poor sleep quality and depression among you. So you can see how it's all connected. Poor sleep is linked to altered brain development in adolescence, depression, suicidal ideation. And 1 in 3 adolescents report using social media until midnight or later. So you can see how this all just really is enmeshed all together. So you've got kids on social media, potentially addicted, and that's changing their brain structure. And they're also up too late, so they're not getting adequate sleep. So then you've got all of those put together, and you get some depression, some anxiety, or other issues here, like body image issues or disordered eating. This is a big one, I think, especially for adolescent girls. So as I was reading through stuff, I came across this woman, Frances Haugen. This is real, really interesting. So she's a former Facebook employee who was working there, and she just became really concerned about how these algorithms work, how they were feeding information to people in their newsfeed or whatever. And so she ended up leaving because she was like, ethically, I just don't think this is right because they're not making the changes that they need to make. And they are changing these algorithms to become addictive and to elicit strong negative emotions. And she just had a problem with that. So she's like, I'm out of here. But before I leave, I'm going to gather all these internal documents, all this research, and I'm going to print it off, and I'm going to release it. And so she is the Facebook whistleblower. So Wall Street Journal picks up all these internal documents, and they're like, we're going to do an investigation, and we're going to see what Facebook's own research said. So here's what they found. These are quotes from internal research at Facebook. 32% of teen girls said that when they feel bad about their bodies, Instagram made them feel worse. Facebook, Instagram, they're all part of the same thing. We make body image issues worse for 1 in 3 teenage girls. Teens blame Instagram for increasing the rate of anxiety and depression. This reaction was unprompted and consistent across all groups. Okay, so they are well aware of what is happening with their algorithms. They know that they are making things worse. Are they changing it? No. That's why so many people have left those companies, because ethically they're like, this is not okay that we're feeding kids this stuff. They'll remove posts that they are finding are problematic, but it's too late by then. The kids are already seeing the stuff. So in addition to leaking all of this information, Wall Street Journal is like, let's create a bunch of TikTok accounts posing as 13-year-old girls who are seeking weight loss videos and things like that. So let's just see what happens when we create accounts like this. And here's what came up in those feeds. A bunch of videos, tens of thousands of videos, are being fed on these accounts, 300-calorie-a-day restrictive diets, recommending laxatives, videos of emaciated teens with hate comments. Really ugly stuff. I mean, they're registered as 13-year-old girls, and this is the stuff that's showing up in the newsfeed. So really crazy stuff. This is a really good podcast, by the way. Wall Street Journal, Facebook Files. If you're looking for a juicy new podcast, it's very interesting. But be warned, you might want to just deactivate your social media when you're done listening to it. So those are the mental health effects, briefly. Here's some additional concerns. I see cyberbullying is a lot with the kids that I'm working with. And this is by strangers, but also by friends and kids that they know at school. So Surgeon General Advisory reviews 36 studies, and they found a consistent relationship between cyberbullying via social media and depression among children and adolescents. I absolutely see this. You know, I've got kids coming in, friends are saying mean things about them online, or they're seeing their friends do stuff without them and posting it on purpose to make them jealous. And it is affecting not just their social life, but also their own mental health. You know, this is such a sensitive time. You guys remember what it was like to be in middle school, especially as a girl. It's rough. And so social media, and these are all things that aren't new, right? We all experience this stuff growing up too, but the issue is that I think social media just amplifies it. It just increases it, makes it worse. Then we've got safety issues. Social media platforms can be sites for predatory behaviors and interactions with malicious actors who target children and adolescents. Nearly 6 in 10 adolescent girls say they've been contacted by a stranger on certain social media platforms in ways that make them feel uncomfortable. Oh, really, really hate that quote, especially as a mom to girls. But I think it's important for us to realize that there are people out there who are actors, and they are trying to find vulnerable kids on social media. You know, I think it's kind of ironic. As a mom to girls, I get so nervous about them running around the neighborhood, and obviously they're still really young, but we've allowed our six-year-old to start like riding her bike around the block, thanks to my husband, who's kind of a free-range parent. And so it's so easy to be like, oh my God, she's gonna get snatched up, you know? And I think a lot of parents worry about that kind of stuff. Yet we'll hand them a smartphone with access to social media, and it's like the predators. I mean, there's so much evidence that it's safer today than it was 20, 30 years ago. Kids just aren't really getting snatched up off the street. But they are getting potentially groomed on social media platforms where somebody's out there trying to convince them to send pictures or to meet up. I've seen this with clients. It's really, really sad and really rough. So this kind of stuff is happening out there too on social media, unfortunately. So now that I have completely freaked you out and raised your heart rates and caused some anxiety, let's talk about some positives. So don't worry, we're gonna talk about some solutions here in a minute when it comes to this stuff. I realize that's a lot of kind of rough information to be taking in, but we'll get to some solutions here in a minute. But let's talk about some positives. Social media is not all bad, right? There are some good things. So this is a picture, two pictures of Tommy and Tyler. So this is a family in the home church I'm in. They both have this rare condition called cranio something rather, and I'm just going to butcher it, so I'm not going to say it. But basically, they have this condition where there's premature fusion of the skull bones. And so that will restrict growth of their skull. And then if it's left untreated, it can restrict brain growth too. Super rare, not a whole lot of information in the medical world about it. And so their parents were obviously, as any parent would be, just kind of anxious and feeling like, man, what do we do with this? There's just not a lot of information out there. Well, they were able to find a group of parents with kids who have this condition and find support, find a lot of information that was so helpful. This would have never been possible without social media, right? I mean, you can't really, before social media, effectively talk to people that are across the country dealing with this stuff. So that was hugely helpful for them. Here's a recent picture of Tommy and Tyler. So sweet, fifth grade? I can't remember. But yeah, they're completely normal, healthy boys, and they're doing great. And now their mom is still on that forum and able to help new parents whose kids are getting diagnosed with this too. So what a great resource. And we see this with a lot of things. Parents with kids with developmental disabilities or other issues, we can find so much support and so many resources on social media. Another positive, do I have any Bachelor Nation peeps in the audience today? My guilty pleasure is the Bachelor franchise. I just absolutely love watching The Bachelor, Bachelorette, Bachelor in Paradise, whatever's on that season. And then after the episode airs, getting on Instagram and seeing what funny memes are out there about that night's episode. So this is Brayden. He was on The Bachelorette last season, and he had a wonderful earring collection. I don't know. I'm really showing my true colors here, that I take joy in people being made fun of on social media. Maybe I'm a cyber bully. I don't know. But this kind of stuff brings humor. You know, there's a lot of mom humor on social media. So it can be lighthearted. It can add some humor to our lives. Also, a lot of us are stay-at-home moms. There's a lot of side hustles that we can do. A lot of small business owners. I have a really good friend who owns a small business, and all of her marketing happens on social media. And that's how she makes a living. You can sell just about anything in your house on buy, sell, trade, and make some extra cash. That's very positive. But unfortunately, there's also problematic content out there for parents. Stuff like this. So these are all from top accounts, like some of the most followed accounts that are targeted towards parents. So things like, correcting a child does not help them learn right from wrong. You know, I can't even with that. What does that even mean? Like, what am I supposed to do then? Infant sleep, your baby's not sleeping. Well, there's all this information, misinformation that you have. Let me tell you how it really is. Oh, don't be a helicopter parent. Here's three signs that you might be. Oh, and don't forget about dry drowning. Is that a thing? Well, we've got all the information for you. And did you know that you could trigger your child's anger and not even realize it? I bet you didn't. Here's five ways you do that, Mom. Oh, you're teaching your kid to be kind? That's so good, but don't turn them into a people pleaser now. And you're like, oh my God, you're taking good things and making us anxious about them. Oh, don't ever say these things to your kids. Homework edition, meaning there's other top things that I should never say to my kid. Good, apologize to your kid, but don't do it this way. So I don't know about you guys, but this shows up on my Instagram reels all the time. And what is it doing for us? I mean, there's some good information out there, right? There are some things that have been helpful to me. But is the mom psychologist and the peds doc talk really helping me as a parent? Or is it just making me kind of feel bad about being how I am as a mom? Is it making me feel anxious or like I'm not doing good enough? Making me feel guilty? I don't know how helpful some of this stuff is. And I think some of us are more sensitive to this kind of stuff than others. But secondly, who are these people that we're following? What are their credentials? Okay, so there's the mom psychologist. There's a pediatrician on here. But there's bad doctors and psychologists out there, right? We don't know how good these people actually are at their jobs. And just because you have followers on Instagram doesn't give you some kind of credibility. So I do think there's stuff out there that is just being fed to us that is not actually all that helpful. Another issue is distraction. How distracted are we by our phones when we're parenting? Oh man, I remember this time where my oldest daughter was like 15, 18 months. And we were sitting on the floor in the living room and she's playing and I'm just scrolling on my phone. I can't remember what I was doing. And she walks over to me, grabs my phone out of my hand, puts it down, and then grabs my hand like towards her toys, like a little toddler's way of being like, Mom, play with me. Ugh. And it just felt like a knife to the heart. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, I'm just sitting here scrolling instead of interacting with her. So I do think it can be a distraction for us. This is a quote from this book, The Big Disconnect. Really like this book. As you can see, I've got it all marked up. It's really good. It's about protecting childhood and family relationships in the digital age. So here's a quote. Your interactions with your baby are the classroom of early childhood. Language, reading, play, movement, all of it begins with you and the quality of connection you establish and continue to nourish from birth to the early years. Okay, so it's really important not to just be in the room with our babies and toddlers, but to be actually interacting and relating to them. Why? Because they're looking to us to model emotional, relational, movement, play, language. They're getting all of that from us. We know this, right? We're aware of this. And I'm not saying that you need to be on the floor with your baby and toddler 24/7. There's laundry to do. There's dishes to do. There's dinner to make. We've got stuff that we've got hangouts. Our own needs need to be met. But I do think it's important for us to remember, am I really a couple times a day interacting with my young kids who are still at home with me, not at school? I came across this article too. This was really interesting. This is a study done by these two women who are psychologists. Does digital media use harm children's emotional intelligence? A parental perspective. So here's how they are defining emotional intelligence. Basically, can kids accurately recognize their emotions in themselves and in other people? Can they regulate those emotions and use those emotions to plan and motivate and achieve goals? So that's their basic definition of emotional intelligence. So what they did was they asked these are the four questions that they were testing for in this study. Do these four things affect a child's emotional intelligence, empathy, or emotional regulation? One, does their own digital media consumption affect emotional intelligence? Do non-digital media play activities affect it? So, you know, being outside, running around, free play, all that. A parent's digital media use or parent emotional mediation, meaning helping them regulate when they're throwing a tantrum, things like that, or mediating a conflict between a peer or a sibling, or media co-use, like watching a movie or playing video games with your kids. Do any of these four things affect a child's emotional intelligence? So they surveyed 400 parents ages 5 to 12. So out of all four of these things, this is the only factor that related to a child's emotional intelligence, empathy, or emotional regulation skills. None of the other things were really all that significant. So here's a summary of their findings. Parent use of their mobile device around their children was associated with having children they rated as lower in emotional intelligence generally. Why is that? Well, because at best, there's divided attention when we use our phones, when our kids are around, and there's evidence that parents exhibit still face when on their phones. So they lose so kids are losing the benefit of the parent's emotional response. So just in case you don't know what still face is, this is still face. This is my daughter Maddie watching TV. So still face is just no expression. This is what you look like when you're scrolling on your phone. So yeah, parents' mobile device behavior around their children is likely a meaningful impediment to their child's emotional skill development. So it's rough to hear. We're affecting our kids potentially negatively if we're sitting and scrolling too much. So those are the things that I've got for parents. Here's a summary of all the things that we just quickly went through. Effects on kids, effects on parents. There's a lot of things here. These are all the issues we're facing. There's more, but you know, that's what we talked about this morning. So what are we supposed to do with all this? So like I said earlier, I don't want us to walk away freaked out, anxious, or feeling guilty. What are we supposed to do with all this? Well, this is my first reaction. As I'm conducting all this research, I'm like, this is terrible. Social media is so bad. I'm definitely addicted to social media, so I'm getting all of my pictures off there. I'm deactivating all of my accounts. My kids will never, ever have social media under my roof. I don't care if I'm the worst mom. They think I'm terrible. I don't care if they're social pariahs. I'm getting my husband off. There will be no social media under my roof. But, you know, this is just an emotional reaction, right? That is my forte, to react emotionally. So, emotional reactions are rarely ever helpful. And so that's not what we want to do. We don't want to just have an emotional reaction, be freaked out, and just never, we're not doing this. Everyone has to make a decision for what's best for their own family and for themselves here. So let's remember that we've just gotten all these tools in our tool belt, and we've got some practical things we can do. So at the end of that advisory, there was all these recommendations for parents. First recommendation was to create a family media plan. So you can go to this website and create a very detailed, extensive social media or family media plan, and like per individual, if you want to. It could be more casual than that, though. Basically, what you just want to do is have agreed upon expectations that help establish healthy boundaries with technology at home. And coming up with this together with your kids and making sure that you are part of this family plan too, and that you're abiding by whatever plan that you guys come up with. Creating tech-free zones and encouraging children to foster in-person friendships. So tech-free zones, where are we just not going to allow the computers and the phones to go? I think bedrooms is a great one, because apparently kids are in their rooms at night, and when they're supposed to be sleeping, they're scrolling on their phones, which is affecting their sleep and their brain development and maybe even causing some mental health issues. So if we just didn't allow phones in the bedrooms in the first place, that would solve a huge, huge problem. So again, every family needs to decide what's going to work for them. And I think along with tech-free zones, tech-free times. So, you know, when are we as a family, everyone's phone is away, you know, at the dinner table or whatever, making sure we have times where technology is just not allowed, it's not happening. Modeling responsible media use, kind of talked about that a little bit already. We got to lead the way here. Follow your own family media plan. And teach safe and responsible tech use. So instead of just, no, it'll never be in my house, I'm never allowing this, why don't we educate our kids on the way this works? Here are the dangers of this. Here are the things that you could run into or come across, and teaching our kids how to handle this in a responsible and safe way. And you can explain this even to your really little kids and explain it differently depending on what their age is. Our daughter, Vivian, found one of like my old phones in a drawer and pulled it out and was like, Mom, can you plug it in and charge it? And can this be my phone? This was like a year ago, so she's 5. And I was like, no, absolutely not. You can't have a phone. You're 5. Why not? Mom, come on. Why can't I have a phone? So I'm like, I got to give her a good reason. Otherwise, she's just going to keep hounding me about it. And so, you know, I explained to her the best I could to a 5-year-old some of this stuff. Like, doctors say this is not good for your brain to be sitting in front of a screen. In that it can, if you do this too much, it can make you really, really sad or worry a lot. You know, the best way I can explain depression and anxiety to her. And that was a good enough answer for her. And so now when I'm on my phone scrolling, she'll be like, Mom, stop. I don't want you to be too sad. You're going to be too sad if you keep scrolling. So she's holding me accountable Which is good. I mean, it's good to give our kids permission to hold us accountable in this area. I mean, sometimes you really are like, this is important. This is an important text or email I need to send, but for me at least, it's not always the case. So these are some really good practicals, but I don't want to forget to include the Lord in this as well and kind of get a biblical perspective before we end today. So I think the first question we really have to ask is, why is social media so alluring? Why is it so addictive? What are we looking for? What's it doing for us and our kids? Well, I think a lot of it has to do with social media creating an illusion that we have meaning, that we belong, or that we are in some type of community. And we have been designed to desire these things, right? God has created us with purpose. He wants us to feel like we belong, and has created us for community. So I think the reason why it's so alluring is because it promises these things, but it doesn't actually really provide meaning, belonging, and community. And so how can we get that from the Lord? I think about this verse, Jeremiah 1:5. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I love this verse so much. You know, God is such a relational God, and he knew everything about us before we were even in the womb. He knew what we would be like, what our personality would be. Same with our kids. Knows us so deeply and more intimately than we even know ourselves. So we can get this sense of belonging from him and remember, I already belong to him. I don't need to seek that anywhere else in my life. And communicating this to our kids too, which we'll get to in a minute. Also, we've been created for community. Since the beginning of time, you know, God created Adam and he said it's not good for Adam to be alone. So that's why he created Eve. It's been this way. This is just part of God's design. There's so many references in the New Testament, right, about the body of Christ or being united together. Here's just a quick snippet from Romans 12. So in Christ, we, though many, form one body, and each member belongs to all the others. So I belong. I'm an individual. I'm unique. God has created me, and there's no one else like me. But I'm just one part of this body, and we all come together and operate together, and that's our community. And so we have this community here, or in our home churches, or in our community, you know, out in our neighborhoods or wherever, and we're not going to get it on social media. So I think the best thing for us to do would be create and facilitate belonging and community for ourselves and for our kids. So let's talk about belonging first. This is another quote from The Big Disconnect. It's just the being together, really together with parents and family that give children confidence, pride, security. They feel they belong, they feel the connection, and they're more likely to talk about the things that matter to them in that setting than in any other time. Yeah, so spending time as a family, if we don't want our kids to go out on social media or wherever, really, and try to find a sense of belonging and identity and community out there, then we have to create it ourselves in our home. So here's just some ideas that I have. Getting quality family time. This came up a lot already in the discussion. Making sure that we're spending intentional time together frequently as a family. And what's so cool about this is that we can be creative. Every family's into different things. There are so many ways that you can create quality family time based on what you and your spouse or whoever's in your family unit enjoy, what your kids enjoy. I love that. We can just get really creative with this. But you will get bonus points if you can add physical activity and getting outside. with the quality family time. Why do I say this? Well, remember when we were talking about dopamine and how our kids are getting overstimulated on social media, and that's how they are getting their dopamine. Well, there's healthy ways to get dopamine. And if you just Google how to increase dopamine, in the top three is always exercise, physical activity, and getting outside. So why not kind of combine those things, and we're getting it all. And our kids are feeling really good when they're hanging out with us. We want that, right? My husband is so good at this. When our kids were like little, he was like, I want to be an outdoor family. We're going to camp. We're going to hike. We're going to bike. And I'm like, oh, those are not my things. But all right, I can get behind that. And so, yeah, it's like we spent the summer at a national park, and we plan on doing more of that. Just recently, they started this new thing. I've yet to experience this, but they go to Coco Canyon, which Coco's our dog. And so my husband takes the dog and the girls to Whetstone Park, and there's a certain section that they call Coco Canyon. Coco gets to run off leash. My kids are running around, and it's like up and down and running and just playing in the creek and getting dirty. And they love it so much. When my husband's like, Coco Canyon, the girls are like, yeah, Coco Canyon, let's go. It's going to be so great. So another thing dads are really good at is like getting real physical with kids. They do something called Daddy Monster. I don't really know what Daddy Monster is, because I always like remove myself when Daddy Monster happens, because it's like loud and screeching and lots of throwing, and I feel anxious. So I just remove myself and go do the dishes, or like, I don't know, get somewhere that's more quiet. But yeah, just that real physical fun activity with your kids. So just some ideas about facilitating belonging, and maybe people can talk about this together with each other. But I thought we could talk about the second part, community, building community for our kids. We can discuss this together. So in addition to facilitating belonging, it's important that we build community for ourselves and for our kids. We're so good. I would say our church is just exceptional at building community. So good. We're so privileged to be in a place where this is really emphasized. I do think sometimes it's harder for us to think about how we can build it for our kids. We're so focused on community for ourselves. But how can we really facilitate that for our kids? And not just in Christian community, but a diverse community. We were reading a book, Girls on the Edge, Leonard Sachs, and he makes the point that it's so important for your kids to be in different types of community. So that is what I had. Here's all my sources that I used for today, just in case you guys wanted them. So yeah, that's what I had. Again, I am just really hoping that all of this information that you guys took in today, there's a lot of negative stuff. And I just don't want anyone to walk away today feeling bad or guilty or anxious or whatever about this stuff, but rather, okay, I've got some information, I've got some tools, and I've got some practical things that I can start doing to, you know, deal with social media in a healthy way. So, oh, one thing I forgot to mention, these are really cool cards, Our Moments. I think, James Rochford? Yeah, recommended these at some men's retreat. They're just like conversation starter cards, because, you know, you'll be like, how was school? And that's like, not, you know, you never get much out of that question. But we do these at the dinner table. We'll pick a couple, and that's always a good way to get some quality conversation in. So it's called Our Moments. And there's kids, there's couples, there's families. There's also a generations one that you can do with like grandparents or things like that. So they're very cool.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.